My name is Ramazan Ustrik. I'm 50 years old, and I've been a journalist for the past 35 years. Now I'm producing a program called Breaking Point. I used to be a war correspondent and went to the thick of the fighting and wars throughout the world. Saddam Hussein got Iraq involved in a long, drawn-out war with Iran. That war lasted 8.5 years. I covered it from the get-go, right down to the last moments. I went to Iraq 3 times as a reporter for Breaking Point. In fact, I traveled extensively throughout that country in order to produce my program. We have produced programs in 64 different countries around the world. Each of these countries has had a severe low point in its history. Sevcihan is the reporter for this program, and she is also my assistant. We think, plan, and move as a unit. Well, we started out in northern Iraq, in the Kurdish area. Though that was right during the middle of the war, there was no sign of it in the north. Everything seemed so normal, it was hard to imagine that there really was a war going on. We asked the locals what life had been under the Saddam regime. And then we set out for Baghdad by car. I traveled to Baghdad for the first time in 1987. At that time, while the Iran-Iraq war was going on, there were also sporadic clashes between Saddam forces and Kurdish fighters. Only a year later, the Halabja massacre took place in that very region. My report was the one that broke the news about the massacre worldwide. That's why I was barred from entering Iraq during the remainder of Saddam's regime. In fact, there were orders out to kill me. So that's why I stayed out of the country. The next time I went to Baghdad was 17 years later in 2004. When I entered Baghdad, there were the images that frightened me. You could feel the fear and anxiety on every corner. During the Saddam era, people were afraid to discuss politics. They were afraid to get together and talk to each other. They were scared, witless, because with the type of dictator they had, they could easily end up either dead or in jail. But when I returned, I could still feel that same fear and anxiety. This time, people were wondering where the next bomb would go off, or who would be the next to take pot shots at them, or from which direction the bullets would come. Countries like the U.S. and Europe, which had put Saddam in power in the first place and then gone on to support his regime during the Iran-Iraq war, what did they do it for? What was their purpose? It could only have been to overthrow the Iranian government, but it backfired. Today, if Iran's system of government is strong, it's partly because of the war and the West's support for the Iraqi regime. I saw how Baghdad neighborhoods had been divided up by concrete walls. Some were protected areas. In fact, the whole scenario reminded me of the wall separating the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Kebit Düzen yoktu. Her yer bombalanmış.
There was absolutely no order. It seemed like a bomb had gone off on every corner. Saddam's important buildings had been the first to be hit during the U.S. military attack. The pictures of the intelligence ministry were devastating. That was the building in which Saddam had monitored information related to the Middle East. That was where they had their wiretapping and bugging apparatus. The Iraqis say that back in those days, people were even afraid to walk on the stretch of sidewalk in front of that building. It was totaled. Some homeless people are now living in its ruins. In Baghdad, there's a good possibility that a bomb will go off at any given time. Sometimes when we were filming and interviewing people there, we'd suddenly hear this deafening explosion, and then the sirens would begin to wail. Another area had been hit by either a bomb or rocket, and we'd pack up and rush to the scene. When we'd get there, we'd see a gaping hole in the ground and shreds of human flesh. A few survivors would be milling about, either dazed or crying their eyes out. They'd say that there had been another suicide attack. Security was tight on the road to Karbala. The American soldiers really restricted our filming. Even in Baghdad, we'd start talking with them and they'd take our IDs. They'd photocopy them and take notes. Only after that would they allow us to film certain areas. We talked with a number of American soldiers and found out that a lot of them were contractors who just wanted to end their stint safely and get back home as soon as possible. At the places where the Americans had set up checkpoints, a group of kids would usually gather and joke around with them. These children are accustomed to war. They grow up seeing bombings, death, executions, and funerals on a daily basis. Even their playgrounds are filled with soldiers. As you can see in this picture by yourself, there are American soldiers in front of their houses. Here, look at it. The children and the American soldier there.
Halk aslında Amerika ile.
The people are caught in the middle between the Americans and terrorists like Al-Qaeda. They don't have any choice. So, like it or not, they're living in a veritable pressure cooker. They'll eventually suffocate. They become poor and lose their hope in the future. They can't send their children to school. Those with businesses can't run them. Farmers can't work in their fields. They don't even feel safe in their own homes.
Gazetecilerin orada can güvenliği yoktu çünkü.
Even journalists aren't safe there. They are frequently shot at. Both sides consider them fair game. Those who launch terrorist operations on mosques and the occupiers as well. It's really risky for journalists in Iraq. A journalist can lose his or her life at any given moment. During the 22 days it took to film our first program, we traveled throughout the country. We went to Kirkuk, Mosul, Fallujah, Karbala, and Baghdad. All around. During the 90s, a lot of journalists died while they were covering conflicts around the world. If we compare those figures with the ones taken from the 80s, during the Iran-Iraq War, for example, which lasted for 8.5 years, the figures in the 90s were really high. Back in the 80s, the number of journalists killed was really not much of an issue. At least I don't remember anyone making an issue of it.
4 yıl içerisinde
the number of journalists who've lost their lives in the past 4 years is staggering. It is said to be around 190. The Vietnam War wasn't as dangerous for journalists. So why have the numbers risen so sharply? Well, really, why? Well, for one thing, the enemy is no longer the guy who is facing you at the front. Both sides are targeting the journalists. That's because they believe that if journalists get killed, the conflict will be given greater coverage. So they are actually using the journalists as propaganda too.
Then the two sides starts shooting at each other. We knew the hostile sides, but suddenly a journalist was kidnapped, and it was...
That's when some previously unknown group makes an announcement that it's responsible. That puts it in the limelight. Kidnapping a journalist gives it instant fame. When I went to Iraq for the second time, for our second program, I quickly saw that things had gotten a lot worse. The situation in Iraq was deteriorating day by day. The clashes were intensifying. Large numbers of people were dying and living conditions were deplorable, much worse than they were last year, or last month, or even yesterday. The battle lines aren't clear in Iraq. There's definitely a war going on, but it has no clear battle lines. The whole mess is complicated and blurred. It's really a dirty war. I don't think it's the Iraqis fighting among themselves. I think the people causing the trouble are other countries that have scores to settle with each other and have simply made Iraq their battleground. Journalists are wearing flak jackets these days because the areas they have to go in, which the incidents occur, are really dangerous. In fact, it's becoming increasingly difficult to even go to those places. American soldiers won't let the journalists in to film those sites, like the ISTÜ. In different places, you can see signs forbidding picture taking. In fact, in those areas, you can risk being shot by just lifting your camera. If an American soldier tells you not to film, then you'd better not, unless you want to risk getting shot. One incident is really hard to forget. There was a guy who was screaming in a hospital. He yelled. He wanted to know how it could be possible for one Muslim to shoot another in this holy place. If things were in the hands of the Iraqis, such a war would never have even occurred. These people have been living with each other for hundreds of years, and they have had problems before, but they have never wound up in the bloodbath like this. It was hard to find anybody, any being, on the streets in Mosul after 5 or 6 o'clock p.m. It seemed like a deserted city because it was Mosul. One night, we went out for dinner at a riverside restaurant in Mosul. As it turned out, once we got there, we were forced to spend the night there in the boondocks. So first we checked into a nearby hotel and then went to the restaurant and ordered our food. Less than 5 minutes later, an Iraqi came and started talking to our driver. He said that he was a reporter as well, and told us that we should leave because it was dangerous. We refused to take him seriously. So he came back in another 5 minutes and told us that he really knew what he was talking about. He told us to leave because that place was not safe. He told us that we should have our driver take our food to our hotel. Our driver agreed with what he was saying, so we got up and left. The driver brought us food and we ate in our hotel rooms. We went back to that place sometime later. As it turned out, we had the same driver. He told us that a group of kidnappers had been caught and they confessed that they had planned to kidnap a group of Turkish journalists in Mosul on a certain date. He said that they had gone to where they had heard that the journalists were, only to discover that they had left 5 minutes earlier. Just imagine that, only 5 minutes earlier. On our third visit to Iraq for our third program, the situation had notably deteriorated. Iraqis woke to the sound of an explosion every day. And that was just the beginning. Each day, there were numbers of bombings. Each incident resulted in heavy casualties. In fact, these bombings had become so common, nobody thought anything about people losing their lives in such incidents. And papers no longer even bothered to mention them. So the Iraqi people have been forced to accept the ugly and savage realities of war. On our first night in Baghdad, the streets were deserted by 5 or 6 p.m. And it was really hard finding a safe hotel. On a number of occasions, we couldn't even find anything to eat. And it was often hard finding a place to sleep. We sometimes had to work till midnight. Despite all the difficulties, my friends and I dealt with the situation. No one posed a burden on anyone else. We all pulled together, and a spirit of cooperation prevailed the whole time we spent in Iraq, filming and interviewing a bunch of people from one end of the country to the other. The result was a quality program. Something has happened nearly every day for years now. In fact, when a day passes without some type of catastrophe occurring, people are really surprised. They all wonder why nothing happened that day. They all naturally wonder if it isn't the calm before the storm. I mean, assume for a moment that there has just been a bombing. The dead are scattered all over the place, and some cars are on fire. The police arrive on the scene and cordon off the area. The fires are put out and the dead are removed. The rubble is cleared and carted away. People stand by watching as soon as the place has been cleaned up and is reopened. You can once again hear street peddlers playing and selling CDs of resistance songs. Despite the turmoil in Iraq, the people are still warm and friendly. It's like I say, they're simply caught in the middle and are getting just poorer and poorer. But believe me, if you go to their homes, they will give you their last cup of tea and they'll tell you the same thing. They just want to live their lives. They say they don't want others coming in and fighting in their country. The Iraqi people also say that the U.S. claimed that it would overthrow Saddam and establish democracy in Iraq. The West promised this. They were happy when Saddam was overthrown because he was, after all, a dictator. But things are so bad now, they almost wish that they had Saddam back. God's most precious gift to man is life. And life is made beautiful by man himself. On the other hand, man has the ability to make it hell on earth. Unfortunately, it is our own human selfishness and clashes of interests, that is, egoism, that have caused wars, conflicts, and clashes among all the nations.